Let me start off by saying I am not anti-law enforcement. In fact, I get along well with the police. I've known several who are exceptionally good people. My worst police experience was as a teen, being mischievous. I hit a cop with a water balloon in the dark thinking it was one of my friends. Big oops. He just lectured me and took me home, though. He remained a family friend for decades. All of them are people like all of us, but after a trip out of state, I have to wonder if some really aren't demons. I went from Utah to New Mexico to pick up my mom, because she was having a hard time living alone at age 79. It was planned that when the time came, she would come to live with me. My husband was 100 miles ahead of us with the U-Haul truck full of her belongings. I was driving her Nissan car with her 2 fur babies riding in the back seat in their carriers. The cats were seat-belted in and covered up with a blanket. We laughed and joked the entire way, even stopped at a souvenir shop because we knew we wouldn't be back again. We drove for hours. So far, a smooth trip. We stopped in Gallup Navajo Reservation land for gas and snacks. It was nearly 1 a.m. at this time. When I parked at the gas pump, a Navajo man appeared at the car window, holding a cloth with silver and turquoise jewelry and beaded items. He wouldn't let me open the car door until I rolled the window down 1/2 inch and negotiated for his cheapest item, and stuffed $10 through the window. He couldn't stuff the necklace through a space that small, though, so he hung the necklace on the car antenna and walked away to sit with his buddy at a picnic table nearby the convenience store door. Mom and I just looked at each other and debated if we had enough gas to get to the next station. I hurried and filled up the tank and left ASAP. It felt very creepy. We were the only customers there in the middle of nowhere late at night, and we didn't feel safe. Glad to be on the road again, we were still talking about that spooky guy and calming down from being shaken up. He had a threatening look and mannerisms that suggested that telling him no thanks would be a very bad decision. I told myself to just buy something so he might go away. It was cloudy and seemed extra dark that night. No other traffic on the highway but us through miles of desert. No businesses, nothing but coyotes, buzzards, and sagebrush. Also, lots of stray dogs. Suddenly, the dark night was lit up by this blinding light. I couldn't see anything, not even the lines on the road. Mom joked that aliens were about to come abduct us. New Mexico is famous for the Roswell aliens, for those of you who don't know. My guess, though, is that it was some rednecks with a sixer who were bored, or highway robbers or something. Well, we were both wrong. We somehow entered the Twilight Zone. This large vehicle hovered very close to our back bumper, deliberately blinding me with a set of extremely bright lights pointing right at me. I was driving 65, the exact speed limit, and the truck followed for miles before deciding to finally pass me. Thank God. However, as he passed, he pointed his spotlight at me and kept blinding me directly in my eyes. The side of his door said, "Sheriff." We had a bad feeling about this, and decided he was just checking us out to see if we looked like wanted outlaws or something. Mom called us Thelma and Louise. I joked and told her we weren't all that far from the Grand Canyon. I tried to be calm and act normal, and make no mistakes to give him a reason to pull us over. You see, in the news for the past several weeks, Mom had told me there was this serial rapist cop in that area of New Mexico. I thought she was joking, but she swore up and down she wasn't. I could tell that this cop wasn't acting right. He didn't want to pull us over. He wanted to scare us. I told my mom to get my phone and call 911 to see why this officer would be interested in us and describe what he was doing. No service. Instead of passing, he was just driving directly alongside us. He was shining his brightest lights directly in my face, making it nearly impossible to drive. I knew if I pulled over, though, I might regret it, and I had to keep us safe. I joked that things come in threes, so what's next? We looked at each other and said, "We crash." We tried not to laugh and look at the road. We were calming ourselves and each other with jokes, but we were truly afraid. The car dropped back and got behind me again, following much too closely with those horrible bright lights. I was always prepared to be pulled over, but he never turned on his red and blue lights. For several more miles, he stayed right behind me and made it as dangerous as possible to try and drive. We asked each other all the questions only this crazy guy could answer. Why is he doing this? What's wrong with him? Was it something we did? Mostly, though, we discussed what we should do. We didn't exactly have a lot of options. We planned to stop at the next open business. As suddenly as he lit up our night, though, he turned off all of his lights and just vanished into the dark. We weren't sure if he would pop up again, so it took a long time to feel like we got away. He followed us for 25 miles. I trembled for the next 200. I wanted to talk to the sheriff department after I was sure we were safe, and ask what the actual fuck just happened. We decided to just be grateful it wasn't worse. We weren't harmed in the end, but we were shaken as hell. We wondered if that wasn't the rogue cop in the news, and we were so glad we were together and not driving alone. Plan A would have meant we each would drive a vehicle, but when we needed another driver, Plan B, my husband volunteered and towed our car so we could drive together in hers. The highway we were on was even 666 until they eventually changed the number later. Did I beat the devil on Highway 666? I don't know. I'm glad I won't be going back there ever, though. In 1985, I lived on the Mesa in Santa Barbara, California. Across the street from my home was a mini shopping center with a small grocery store, a lumber store, and a dentist's office. Kim Morgan, a college student, was kidnapped from there after agreeing to meet her abductor under false pretenses. She had placed an ad seeking a room in exchange for doing housework and babysitting. There were several witnesses who saw them together there, and her car was found there on the day she disappeared. There were sketches of this man in the papers and on the news. He was very distinct, and so was his car. Her photo was also all over the news. 3 days after Kim was taken, I was walking to the corner and took a shortcut across the shopping center parking lot. I did this all the time, but today was different. A car matching that description of the wanted car cut me off, and a man matching the description of that wanted man offered me a ride. I recognized that man and the car from the sketches in the news and tried to act like I didn't notice. I said I didn't need a ride because I was near where I was going. He insisted he would drive me there. I pointed at the dentist's office and said I was already at my destination. The man became very angry and told me he'd drive me. I walked away, behind his car, and made a point to look at his license plate. I wanted so badly to run, but I knew I had to walk calmly. I entered the office and told the receptionist to call the cops because Kim Morgan's kidnapper had just tried to get me into his car. The lady looked out the window to see his car leaving the driveway. Dr. Barthels was my dentist, and everyone there knew me. I forgot the license plate number before I got into the office, unfortunately. The police were called, and I gave all the info I had. At their suggestion, I did not continue my journey to the fast food place in the next shopping center, and didn't go back home in case he was watching nearby. The police were going to take me home, but they didn't want to show the man where I lived. The plan was to stay in their waiting room until my mom could pick me up after work. I was very shook up and creeped out. There was no doubt it was that same man. I felt lucky to have had the presence of mind to act calmly and get into a nearby business for help. Mom picked me up almost 3 hours later, and we went home together. I was grateful to the staff, who stayed 45 minutes past closing time, but locked the door at 5 for safety. My mom watched the news every evening. 2 days after she picked me up at the dentist's office, a shocking top story chilled me to the core. Some of Kim Morgan's dismembered remains were found in the Los Padres forest, less than 10 miles from my home. That was another shock to me, because I often rode my bike on those forest roads. I'd pack a lunch and make a day of it. I was feeling lucky I didn't cross paths with him there, because I doubt I could have gotten away in that case. There were similar murders that summer, and possibly the man was a serial killer. In the end, he was never caught. Background. I was 26 at the time, pregnant, and live in a very rural area. Tom had always been friends with my friends throughout high school. He was the quiet art kid who had insane natural talent. Seemed nice enough. But despite always wearing a smile, he just gave people, girls mostly, the feeling that something was off about him. I never spent a lot of one-on-one time with him because of this, but I never really had any reason to believe he was dangerous either, just a bit weird. Anyways, years after high school, I reconnect with my high school sweetheart, Jamie, who happens to be best friends with Tom. Everything was going great for Jamie and me. We got married, started a family, we're remodeling an old family home on acres of land that was our own, the dream. By this point, Tom had become a regular at gatherings. I noticed more and more that he had a weapons fascination and also liked to brag on himself. Obnoxious, but still nothing to make me feel threatened. Tom, by this point in time, had married a woman who was old enough to be his own mother. These two were not a healthy, cohesive couple. Super codependent, manipulative, and apparently they'd even gotten physical with one another. In the midst of this, Tom had started drinking and lying about it as well, getting 2 DWIs and even showing up at our house drunk. Jamie eventually told him to show up sober or don't come over at all. I was about 3 months pregnant, and he didn't want that in our home. Time goes by and no word from Tom. That is, until about 3 months since his last visit. He calls my husband wanting to chat and sounds very depressed. I'm about 6 months along at this time. Jamie has him come by and they chat outside. Tom wants to leave his wife. Good for him. But something isn't right. Even more so than normal. Jamie sneaks to Tom's scooter while Tom comes inside to use our restroom. He finds a stashed bottle of vodka. While Jamie is still outside, Tom all of a sudden doesn't have to use the restroom anymore. He turns to me and looks me up and down. So cold and expressionless. You know, Jess, women are the most beautiful when they're pregnant. You've never been more gorgeous. He makes a move to get closer to me, but by this time Jamie is walking in. Come outside. We need to talk. Shortly afterwards, I hear Tom leave, and Jamie comes to tell me about the alcohol. I tell him about the creepy comment, and we both agreed that he couldn't be trusted. He was not welcome here until he got help. After that, Tom stopped calling. No texts, nothing. Jamie reached out to make sure he was okay, but no response. From what we heard from his family, he was fine, just working, staying busy, and trying to keep sober. We really hoped he was taking care of himself. 2 months later, at 8 months pregnant, I'm no longer working, preterm labor, and Jamie works 6 days a week. That's a lot of time alone. His schedule was always the same, and had not changed in years, so when Tom randomly showed up at our house at 10 a.m. on a day he knew Jamie worked, I was extremely confused. I usually napped around that time because I was huge and tired. Luckily, I was awake this time, and in our front room. This room has a huge window that faces our driveway, and the door to my right leads to our garage. I shot him a nervous wave through my window. He didn't seem to see me, and was grabbing something out of a duffel bag on his scooter. He pulled out a shotgun. I know there's fight or flight, but I just froze. He also grabbed a bottle and took a swig from it. I'm guessing whiskey because of the bottle and color. He finally noticed me, the sheer horror on my face. In return, I got a hateful look. He said something I couldn't hear, then smiled. Not a happy smile either. He packed up his gun and left. I immediately called Jamie. He didn't answer. I text, totally freaked out while checking the locks. Jamie called back about 10 minutes later, and as we're talking, Jamie's dad calls. Tom just tried to break into his home. Thankfully, Jamie's dad is always armed. He'd caught him red-handed, but didn't call the cops because of their long-standing friendship with Tom's family. Apparently, Tom hadn't had his gun out when he was caught, so Jamie's dad didn't feel threatened enough to call the cops. Not happy about that, but it wasn't my choice. Don't worry, I called the cops myself later that day. That alone was scary and super confusing, but what Jamie told me days later really freaked me out. When I was working, I worked a set schedule, except for occasionally when I'd be called in. One day, a month prior to my incident, Jamie called in sick, and I coincidentally was called in to work. I hated leaving him there sick, but duty called. Jamie said he had been napping a little after 9 due to a high fever. He had woken up at some point to the sound of doors opening and closing, but was so out of it, he figured it must have been his fever. What woke him up and kept him at least semi-alert, though, was the bell on our bedroom door. He heard it jingle twice lightly. He vaguely remembers looking up and seeing what looked like Tom at the end of our bed staring at him. He said he passed out from the fever getting worse and came to not long afterward. By then, Tom was long gone, so Jamie figured it was just a fever dream messing with him. After the gun incident, though, he wasn't too sure anymore. It's been over 2 years, and we make no attempts to talk to Tom. He used to drive by from time to time, but never tried to make contact. That has stopped, but I still make sure all my locks and windows are secure throughout the day. This happened a few years ago, when I was around 20 or so. I was hanging out with my buddy Matt at my apartment, located in the downtown area of a medium-sized Midwestern city. We were drinking whiskey, watching comedies, playing tunes, etc. He mentions that he has a really close friend, Emily, who used to live in my apartment building with her mother. She now lives across the street from me, and he thought it would be a swell idea if we met, because apparently we're very similar, and I was single and ready to mingle at that point in my life. He rings her cell and tells her to come by my place. She arrived at my apartment, and I instantly became fond of her. She was hilarious, very pretty, and a musician just like me. She was around 30, so 10 years older than me. My friend Matt was 35. I've always had friends that are much older for some reason. We played songs together and laughed hysterically for hours. Matt decided to go home, leaving us two alone. We chilled for a while longer, ended up making out, and I got all of her contact info before she told me she's going home and that we would meet up again soon. Over the next few weeks, we developed a pretty strong relationship, and we would hang out almost daily. I would just throw some pajamas on and walk across the street, and we'd get wasted and watch movies together. It was completely awesome. After arriving home from my 10-day trip in New York City, things got really weird, though. The day I returned, she asked if she could come over, so I unpacked my shit and then told her to stop by. She rings the buzzer, takes the elevator 7 floors up to my apartment, and lets herself in. I was talking non-stop about all of the awesome things I did and the people I'd met in New York City. I could tell immediately, though, that she didn't want to hear any of it. She would change the subject every time I brought it up, and eventually she just said, "Can you stop talking about New York? I really don't give a fuck." I was surprised to hear her speak like this. The Emily I had been getting to know was not like that. She was caring and passionate, an amazing person, or so I thought. Fast forward to a few nights later. I had just gotten home from working a 12-hour shift. I collapse in bed, ready to pass out for the night. It's about 9 p.m. when I get a text from Emily that says, "Hey, what's up?" I didn't feel much like replying at the moment. I was too exhausted, and our last hangout was a bit too weird for me to comprehend, so I was still trying to decide how to deal with that. I plugged my phone into charge, turned off the lights, and fell asleep effortlessly. Suddenly, though, I woke up to somebody pounding on my door, screaming at the top of their lungs, "Open the fucking door! Let me in right now!" My apartment reeks like cigarette smoke. I grab my phone from beside my bed, my heart beating a million miles an hour. 27 missed phone calls, a bunch of text messages, all from Emily. I scan through the text while she's still at the door screaming, trying to break it down. The most recent text from her is a long one, claiming I'm a piece of shit for not responding to her earlier, and she's coming over to beat the shit out of me for not doing so. She had a key to the building still from when she used to live there. I get out of bed, nearly having a panic attack, and try to decide just what my next move should be. Should I open the door and calm her? Should I call the police? Should I just ignore her? I decide to open the door. She begins wailing on me, swinging her arms and trying to hit me. She was smoking a cigarette, and there were three butts on the ground next to her. Smoking indoors was prohibited by my apartment building, by the way. She was very obviously on some sort of drug as well. She kept screaming at me, telling me how awful I am, slurring her speech and losing her balance. Somehow, I was able to calm her down. I took her to the roof of the building, which had a pretty nice enclosed picnic table area. We sat beside one another. She was quiet now, finally. She kept asking me how I could be such an asshole, and that I needed to explain myself. The look in her eyes was pure evil as she spoke to me in this calm demeanor. I tried my best to explain to her. "Emily, I don't ever want to speak to you again after tonight. This whole scenario is absolutely insane. You need some help. Let me walk you home." I took her home and returned to my apartment to attempt sleeping, which of course I did not succeed at. A couple days later, I returned home from work to see an envelope taped to my door. I opened it. It was a handwritten letter from Emily apologizing, saying that I didn't deserve an evil person like her in their life. There was a candy bar attached to the envelope as well, one I had never heard of, that she had always told me I needed to try, and never spoke to her again after that. From what Matt tells me, which by the way he informed me after that he'd always known she was a problematic person, she is a heavy user of crack now, and is working as a food runner at a restaurant nearby.